to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome to Big Sharks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow. He's Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. SP Futures down 56. 56, there's a number. NASDAQ Futures down 180. We're not having the best of mornings here, at least so far. We'll see how that plays out. You know, don't we have to buy the dip, Dave? Buy the dip? So this is an opportunity.
You would think so. That's the way it's been all summer.
All summer, like all decade. Yeah. Maybe every all decade and a half. But it's okay. Cubs won.
You know. Cubs finally, yeah. 11 in a row.
Yeah, they, you know, everybody can, who's Brickhouse's favorite line? And anybody can have a bad century? It's the,
isn't that the truth?
Yeah, when the Lightning won again last night, 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I watched some of that game. It was a pretty good game.
Those guys are pretty good.
Yeah, they are quite a team. They're stacked, though.
Yeah, well, whenever. I actually watched the Hawks play them a couple of times this year, and the Hawks could hang with them on their front line. And you end up as soon as you put Duncan Keith and the little guy DeBrincat and Patrick Kane on the bench, then they just murder you. The Hawks had like one line that could match up, and then the rest were not so much. Just saying. So what is the last night we were. Pretty much unchanged. Now this morning, you know, whack whack. So do we have a reason? Are creatures that tell us what's wrong with the world? Do we have a reason there this morning?
Not to my knowledge.
No,
they're saying it's the Delta variant, but they can say whatever they want.
Yeah, well, if it's it's definitely something that you can do sort of whatever. As I look at the individual stocks, and I don't want to name them because I don't want to do that. I don't see how they could possibly, even if the world is spectacular, David. I don't see how they go higher. I mean, I just don't. And you read the Fed minutes yesterday, and basically they came out and said, "Well, this is by Jeff Cox, who's on CNBC a lot." Fed officials at the most recent meeting talked about reducing asset purchases, but also expressed the need for patience. Why exactly are we being patient? We think the economy is growing faster than it ever has, but we're not sure. We'll talk about that in a second. Some members noted that the faster progress of the economic recovery through the committee overall said the commissions have not met the substantial further progress benchmark. What is that for a benchmark? Substantial further progress to start tightening policy. The meeting summary also reiterated the Fed's view that while inflation has been rising faster than they expect, they see the current trend as transitory. And I don't really understand what they're looking at and why they're basically said that they're going to keep doing what they're doing because they said they were going to do it. And I don't understand why you want to inflate the place other than. But here's my concern, David. You can listen. All three of the stations all day, and you can listen to people on the radio, even us, I guess. But it is, I think it's virtually impossible right now to figure out how exactly the economy is doing. And when I say that, I don't see how you can possibly separate the nominal from the real when you're pouring this much money into the system and inflation is going up as fast as it is. I mean we're going to talk about 6% growth this year. Okay, but if you have 7% inflation, you've got minus one, right? How do you even know where you are? When you go into a restaurant and the stuff is up 20% from the last time you were in there, how do you even know how well the guy is doing? I mean, in terms of how many dinners he's serving.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to a buddy of mine. He was at a breakfast someplace in Orland Park on LaGrange. And he was talking to the guy, and he said, yeah, I can't get workers, you know. Business is okay, but I can't. For all the people that are coming in here, we can't even serve them correctly.
Well, they can't get workers at the price they're willing to pay.
Correct.
Right. So let's look at those numbers. Let's go through those numbers. Hopefully, Lou will call in a second.
Let me give him a call. I'll call him right now.
But I mean, you look at these numbers and you wonder where did all these people retire? I don't think restaurant workers retired. So why is it that all of a sudden you can't get people back? Is it you're paying way too low even to get somebody in the door? And everybody blames the state for paying too much, and it's probably part of it. I mean, my guess is you could have cut back from the 300 extra that the government's paying down to 200 or 150 or something. But I just get this odd feeling that you're having people that are being laid off in the middle area, and yet you're expecting them to go to work for $10 an hour, and they're just not doing it. And I don't know how you deal with that. I mean, I don't know what exactly has changed so much. I mean, we're talking about there's a huge housing shortage. You know, is there really? I mean, I think when you, I think the people who listen to this show are people that are general questioners to start with. I think I sure know some of them they are. But what does it really mean? I mean, where we have this massive housing shortage. Well, you do in Orland Park, you know, where Audrey does stuff. I don't know if it's massive housing shortage, it's a little tight. You do maybe right next to a train station in a nice school district someplace. You sure as hell don't in Peoria. I mean, you don't in East St. Louis, or St. Louis. You don't in Inglewood. You don't in downtown Chicago. So, I mean, if we believe, David, that what do we say? How many people died from the COVID? How many million?
I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Okay, but of all those people.
But I heard yesterday was the first day that no one died from COVID in this nation.
Yeah. Yeah, which is actually a pretty darn good day. We should, like, celebrate. But
right, absolutely.
If you look at the numbers, if we've had, 600,000 people die of COVID, well, it's 600,000 people less, and not obviously all in houses, but I don't know that the population's gone up that much in the last. Where is this all this big shortage coming from? It's a shortage just in some areas and not in others. I'm going to say small towns. But there's no shortage whatsoever. So I mean, you sort of have to be careful when you listen to stuff and research it a little on your own and say, okay, what exactly is happening here? We have people that are less people going to work. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I'll get the real numbers. I'll flash them up. Always have them at our beck and call, David, even though Carl always tells me I'm looking at the wrong page. he looks at the unadjusted. He's an unadjusted guy. And he's got, one thing I've really learned from the man is that you have to take a longer view of things. I mean, if you look at the unadjusted numbers on a yearly basis, well, you had Christmas last year, you got Christmas this year, right? So you're not, that way you don't really need an adjustment. Correct. So when you the further out you go, the more you realize. And I was at my family, your family, somewhat of a function, and people lob quotes out there, and they're taking a short term view of things. I mean, we know people in our family that are opinionated without a whole lot of research going on.
That is a fact.
but we've got, if you look at the household survey, we're basically stuck on 151, which is the last 3 months. The establishment survey showed 800,000 people coming back to work. Household survey, the adjusted household survey does not show that. It has the last 3 months. You got 151.6. These are million. 151.6, 151.2, 159, and then 152. Obviously, is it ramped up earlier in the year? And And it got down to the lowest tick was last June. Well, I don't know about that because they don't have May, but last June was 142. So from the lowest tick, we're like 9 million back up that are working. But from the month before, the end of 2019, before COVID, the number was 157.5. So we're talking roughly 6 million people or less are working than in 2019. Now, we also have 5 more million people that are in this we don't know what they're doing column. Okay? And we've got 3.4 million people more that are unemployed. So if you look at those numbers, I mean, that's the lay of the land. And, but you look at your population, the population is only up 2. You get all this, but the actual people that are over 16 and available to work are down 2. So where did they go? I mean, how do you lose people? I mean, they're not. I mean, I guess a lot of them could have gone back to school or something like that. But we're talking about the non-institutionalized population. Let's not go into how many people should be institutionalized, but which is the civilian non-institutional population is people 16 and over. They're available, but now the people who are actually in the labor force is, and then it's the next number. But you know what you end up having in here is, I think what's dragging on people is we've got, you know, the most of this extra money is coming from the government, and despite what people say, they're going to end up getting that back one way or the other. They're either going to inflate their way back, which is what they're doing, which will not be good for people. And I don't understand why they're so against, if there's a 2 or 3% or 5% inflation, why they're so against people getting that money back in interest. I mean, why do we want to drain the people who have assets? That or cash assets. I mean, why? Obviously, if you can pump up physical assets or some of them, but this whole thing. If you've read the entire, well, I haven't read the entire, but if you read the economic history of the last, well, certainly since 1960, we're going. The last thing you want to do is what they're doing right now. Yet they're doing it, and they obviously think they're right for a reason, David. And I don't. It's stunning of what they. But they have, so no Lou?
No, I tried his number, no answer.
Well, we'll see. Why don't you give John Flynn?
Oh, there he is.
Oh, there he is.
Let's see.
Well, because I have all kinds of human resource questions for Lou. Plus, I want to talk to him about that ESPN girls thing, if he does call in. If not, we'll get a sub somewhere. When you're in the midst of, you know, debating some of this stuff, the fallback position is to look at the actual numbers and make your own decision, which, of course, nobody wants anybody to do these days. They want them to make their decision for them. But not me. I'm going to point you, you know, at the Lou.
Hey, man, I'm sorry. That's on me.
No problem. Well, because, of course, today I'm absolutely bubbling with questions for you. So I don't know what I would have done without my Lou fix.
I wanted to start with just a quick talk about this Nichols Marita Taylor situation that you and Kevin talked about yesterday.
Could I start you just one other spot, because I'm insanely curious about. I had a burger last night with a buddy from the trading floor I knew years ago, and he's getting a job now with a big financial firm, which I will not mention. Lou, how is it? This has kind of been a theme all week. I don't know how we got there, but regarding. You know, a lot of it has to do with the Trump situation and this Amazon deal. I mean, is it at the point now where the bureaucracy is like totally out of control and doing whatever they damn well please, and they don't listen to anybody? What I'm specifically asking, I've heard you say a bunch of times that, and I'm not so sure you were all for it, but that when you interview somebody now, you know, you can't even really ask them if they were in jail, right? You're not supposed to. Yet this gentleman went through 21 days of essentially background hell for this firm. And again, it's in the financial industry, where they quizzed him about everything. Were you ever even charged with a crime? Were you ever, like, arrested? I mean, it has nothing to do with whether you... I mean, how is it that you describe the laws going one way, and yet people can just go the other way if they feel like it? Like the FINRA and the SEC group, they don't pay attention to any of this crap. They do whatever they want. I mean, how is it that somebody doesn't say, "Wait a minute, you idiot"? I mean, how does it, or just you talk? I mean, I don't even know how to answer your question.
Generally, so for example, in Illinois, it's illegal to ask certain questions about criminal history or criminal background. It's illegal in a lot of states, for example, New York, to make any reference to whether you've had. Unless you've been convicted of a felony or certain types of felonies, you can't make that inquiry until after you've offered somebody the job. So that's a general rule for employers. That's on a state by state basis. In the case of somebody applying for jobs in the financial industry, they're given an exception because of
the
fiduciary nature of the relationship.
Okay, they're given an exception, or they just do whatever they damn well please and take the exception.
It's an exception that's crafted into the statute. Certain types of jobs, they're allowed to make that inquiry. So the next question is, what kind of questions are they asking, and how intrusive are they getting? Even in those financial jobs, their queries are typically not supposed to go past inquiries about crimes, certain types of crimes. So, for example, a minor drug arrest or a misdemeanor, traffic stop or misdemeanor, you got in a fight when you were, in college. Those kinds of things typically are not indicative of reliability, and so you're not supposed to be asking about them.
Well, they are. Anyway,
that kind of deep dive background scrub is generally disfavored under most state laws. So, I'm not gonna say these guys are breaking the law because I don't know enough about the circumstances.
Right.
Generally, their legal teams should have scrubbed all of this process. I am continually amazed by how many of these statutes get broken by people who I thought, you've got a legal team. How come you're not talking to them? So, I just don't know without more detail.
Well, what they've done is one of the big hangups. This was 2 years ago because we get audited here at PTI, and these are general things that FINRA is doing, right, in the SEC area, and they're under SEC, although they don't think they are. They think they're independent. One of the things they're doing, Lou, is they're really clamping down on people's outside jobs. Now, where is it written they get a right to do that? So, if somebody's working for Fidelity or someplace as a clerk, they really don't want him working as a bartender on Saturday night. And I don't see where the hell that's their business at all. To the point where your supervisor needs to know about it and sort of ride herd over your outside activities. And to the point where some firms now have basically said you can't have an outside job, or we can fire you. How do you get from point A to point B there, Lou? I don't see how that's even remotely legal.
Well, these folks are at will employees, Tom. So they can be fired for any reason or no reason. And if an employer comes in, as long as it's not some illegal, reason based on a protected factor like race or something like that, you can be fired, and if they want to make a requirement that you can't have an outside job, they can do it.
I'd find it really, really difficult obviously at PTI we, monitor people's stuff. I'd find it real difficult if somebody here needed a little cash and helped his brother-in-law paint somebody's house on a Saturday and my brother fired him. I'd have a real problem with that.
I'm not saying it's a great idea, and I'm not saying it's even ethical, but I'm just saying, you could fire somebody for hair color.
Well, but I'm saying this is a policy of the firm I'm hearing about. By the way, we don't want to monitor anything you do on the outside, so you can't have it. I can't believe that's American at all. I suspect.
At will employment relationships are always problematic to people who think about the ultimate ramifications of them. But in this case, if in fact they want to make that requirement or make that a requirement for the job, you can't have a second job, or you've got to tell us when you've got a second job. I'm not familiar with any statute, at least in the states that I'm licensed, that would prohibit you from doing that.
Well, but if they said you could hit somebody in the head with a water balloon every day, I don't care what the statute says, it's not right.
I agree. So we're, you know, I don't want to get into the, because I do want to talk about this Nichols Taylor situation.
By the way, she's back on her show.
We're back to the old, what should you do versus what should you do.
I know, we can fight that one. Well, the lady was back after one day off her show.
You mean Nichols.
Yeah. Did you read the background of this, because
there are ramifications to this case that I think are kind of scary from a perspective of, you know, management or just coworkers.
What do you mean, relationships
with them?
What do you mean, George Orwell would be happy as a clam at how this all came down?
Well, let me give it. I think it's even worse than what you and Kevin were describing.
Oh yeah, as I was reading more last night. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Nichols is on a call a year ago, last summer, and when COVID was going on, she is talking to a guy who was not initially identified. He was LeBron James's agent, and one of her tight sources for her NBA show. Obviously, sports reporters, like a lot of other reporters, have a kind of symbiotic relationship with people with the people they're reporting. It's problematic, and it's one of the reasons I don't watch ESPN anymore. But in any event, she is talking to this guy, and makes an offhand reference about Maria Taylor, who had been, you know, was being touted as being a sideline NBA reporter and then taking over this NBA final show. And she tells this guy something to the effect of, ESPN's got a lot of diversity problems. They've always had diversity problems. I'm an example of that. And I can certainly understand why they would want to put Maria Taylor, who I think is, you know, who does a great job, all the best to her, Maria Taylor, into one of these roles. Taylor, of course, is black. Nichols is white. I can understand why they would want to put Taylor into one of these roles because, you know, obviously she's black and this helps him with the diversity problem. I get that, but just don't do it with my job because I've got a contract that says I'm entitled to this position. That's the basis of this whole issue.
Okay, well, you missed one point, though, or you haven't said it yet.
What?
She's on the phone with LeBron's agent, buddy, whatever it is, but that's not where it came from.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah.
So she's on the phone with him. She does not realize that she has left her Zoom camera and microphone running and that this is a live, basically what she's doing is making a live feed into ESPN and that this whole conversation is recorded because it's going into a live feed recording situation on Zoom that ultimately gets monitored and picked up by somebody by some technicians at ESPN. So the initial leak that comes out from one of these ESPN techs or whoever reviewed it is just she was having a conversation with an unidentified man and said this. This comes out. ESPN makes some comments. They either do or do not take steps involving Nichols, but there's no more discussion about it.
All right, so the
conversation's over.
All right, so when do we get to the point where Dave, you know, I'll use David as a foil. David, when he was younger, David's girlfriend is having a conversation about how Dave was a drag in the sack last night. Why doesn't somebody just see that thing on the recording and just say delete and say it's none of my friggin' business? And I'll just say delete. It shouldn't have got here, and that's the end of it. Where do we lose that morality that you don't put something you're not supposed to hear? You publish.
It gets even better. So that gets leaked. Nichols continues in her job. Taylor's contract now is coming up for renewal. She has made a demand allegedly for $8 million a year. She's not. ESPN's apparently offered her $5 million. There's some discussion about what's going to happen. Now, instead of just a snippet of this conversation being released, the entire transcript is released. The whole conversation that she has with this agent of LeBron comes back and floats back up again. And now this gets leaked to the New York Times and to a number of other sources to show that, hey, Rachel Nichols, who Taylor is in competition with for a position, Rachel Nichols is really kind of a racist bigot. And Taylor, you know, Taylor's not getting this, or should be getting this job, just because, you know, there's this racist element now at ESPN.
I'll tell you what, Lou, it is from the economic side. If you put a ad in the paper and said, wanted basketball analysts would be willing to pay $8 million, you'd get people who would blow either one of those people away. I mean, when, how this becomes this very central little, I mean, we got to go to break here, but what I'm missing here, did this thing stay on the engineer's thumb drive in case he ever needed it? Did he immediately report it upstairs so it stayed on the ESPN president's?
Chief, you know what happened.
Actually, I don't.
This was kept as leverage by some technician or some management person at ESPN, and that's the conversation I want to have with you when we get back from the break.
Yeah, I mean, this thing is, it's like the tollway. You're supposed to get rid of people's toll stuff after what, 9 months or 6 months, and yet years later,
exactly,
it's used in divorce deals. S&P futures down 56. As the futures down 192, we'll come back. We'll tell you all about what's going on in the world and the market. We'll get back to this interesting subject. Right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. S&P futures down 58.5 now. They were down a little bit more than that, but they were... They were down maybe 3 or 4 points last night when I looked. So this is somewhat of a recent development. When I say recent, it was not obvious when they opened last night at 5. NASDAQ futures down 200, Dow futures down 449. They were down over 500. But of course, we got to buy the dippers. We'll see how they do. DAX down 289, 1.9%. FTSE down 131, 1.8. CAC around down 150. That's 2.3. So they're leading us down over there. Asia, Nikkei down 248. That's 0.9%. Shanghai down 28.8%. Hang Seng over down 807, 2.9%. They've got the regulatory fears over there. They definitely want to talk to Lou O'Hare about that as well, even though it's a little bit off topic for him. But Lou can talk on any topic, Dave. I mean, he's our
yes, he can.
It's like a renaissance man. Bonds down 5 basis points, 1.27. Amazing. I would love to see what this number would be if the Fed stopped buying for a week. I got to believe it wouldn't be 1.27. Bond minus 0.04 to minus 0.33, which is as low as they've been in a while. Japan ducking towards zero, positive 0.01, hanging on. UK 0.56, and they were 0.82 maybe a month ago. So that's been a dramatic drop in these 10-year rates. Oil down 47 cents, 71.73. Brent down 34 cents, 73.09. That spread is back out to roughly $1.40. Natural gas 3.59 unchanged. RBOB unchanged at 2.19. And we've got gold up 12.50 to 18.14. Silver up 9 cents to 26.22. And we've got copper down 7 cents to 4.24. David, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning. It's 6:35 in Chicago. Weather today currently is 66 and cloudy. It's going to be a cooler day today. It's going to be 70 degree, mostly cloudy, possible chance of rain. For our Phoenix listeners, it's going to be another hot one, 92 and clear right now. They're going to be a high of 111 and sunny. Traffic, we have normal buildups on the Eisenhower and the Kennedy due to long-term construction. Also,
long-term is in like a decade and a half.
Well, I could say that, right, yeah. At least for the last 5 years. 55, we have the buildup right at the exit of 94. I have one accident to report at Route 53 at Illinois 64 North Avenue. In sports, Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay winning Game 5, beating Montreal 1-0, winning back-to-back final Stanley Cups. NBA Finals again tonight, Suns leading 1-0, playing the Bucks. In baseball, the Cubs break 11-game losing streak, beating the Phillies 8-3. Sox beat the Twins 6-1, and the Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 6-4. Back to you, Chief.
So the Cubs are looking for Roy Hobbs.
Yes, they are. They're looking for a lot more than that, I think.
They need more than one Roy Hobbs, you know.
Right.
Lou,
So let me continue with the with this tale. So what has happened with Taylor is that somebody inside ESPN, as she was one of her allies, decides, you know, this is the way I'm going to do it, and I'm going to damage Nichols by leaking the full transcript of this conversation, since the first time I leaked it, it didn't work. It didn't give me the result that I wanted. So the first time it was leaked, it was apparently done just to say, hey, here's an example of a racist white person that we can play off, we can play up. It's being done in the context of Taylor's contract negotiations.
When was the first time?
It was a year ago. It was leaked. It was leaked shortly after the conversation occurred.
Right, but did anybody? I don't pay that much attention. But did you hear about it a year ago? I mean, was it leaked, or was it just?
I don't recall it. I don't recall it coming up. I didn't see anything in particular about it. But when the initial leak was done, it was done in a way that she was talking with an unidentified person, and only snippets of it were put forward. Now the whole conversation's out there, and it's gone to the New York Times. And ESPN, of course, removed Nichols initially, and apparently has now put her back in. But the point that I want to make is this is a trend that is insanely dangerous to any kind of working relationship within an organization, and it's also insanely dangerous with respect to just the way that we conduct ourselves day to day, and we now find ourselves in a position because of this tremendous amount of data that is being collected, you know, advertently and inadvertently, you find yourself in the hands of people that you don't know, but who may identify with some cause or some position or with some person on the basis of race, gender, whatever. I hearken back to the release, the IRS, the release of the IRS data on Bill Gates and Buffett and a bunch of other people that was suddenly picked up by a group called ProPublica about 3 or 4 months ago, who said, "Hey, we're gonna publish all the tax data on these people, and here's what we found out about their internal tax bills." That data was apparently released from somebody within the IRS, or the IRS's computers were hacked. But I think it was just a release by somebody within the IRS who said or decided, "I don't like all these rich guys walking around, and I think their taxes are probably suspect, and I can get to that data." And for all we know, it was some GS-2 or 3, some secretary who just happened to have access to it or who saw it on a file, or some data clerk who has access into those systems. And it was released in some to ProPublica out of some concept of, you know, I'm going to help the social justice causes by showing what rich guys are doing with their taxes. This kind of release with this private conversation inadvertently recorded is comparable to that. Somebody decided, you know, I'm going to make Nichols out to be a racist, or I'm going to damage her because I want to help my friend Maria Taylor, either because it's some affinity between based on race or based on gender or based on friendship or based on enmity of Nichols, who knows? But the point is, this is an abomination if ESPN allows it to go forward without taking disciplinary action within their group. And if I was an employment lawyer counseling them, I would say, okay, you guys are now creating a situation where nobody can trust anybody else at the company. Not great for working relationships. And so you need to track down where this thing came from. And if you can't identify the individual, then you take a group action against the group of people that you think might have or had access to this information and may have released it.
Well, Lou, how does this... I don't know anywhere near as much as this as you do, but when I was on the board of the CBO a long time ago, okay, and I'm not pushing that out there as making me above anybody else. It certainly isn't. But we spent... There was an issue with... there was some problem on the floor, and somebody, you know, it was an error of some kind. And the idea was that some firms taped their lines when people called in for orders. Some firms, we'll go nameless, but you can guess, absolutely would never tape their lines because a lot of the stuff they were doing, probably, if you listened to it, would have said it was insider stuff and whatever. I mean, the usual suspects. You know, whatever. We'll get down that road. So the management of the CBO and the board started to go down this road. And all of a sudden you bump into this state law to where you can't tape a phone call for anybody that they don't know they're being taped. You have to tell them, or the state has somehow gotten a situation where if you have those obnoxious beeps, you know, like every 30 seconds or whatever, that they feel that the population has figured out enough that if the thing's beeping at you, that you're being taped. That's enough of a notification.
Right.
So, I mean, but there's a process.
Well, Illinois is a one-party or a two-party state. Both parties on the call have to consider. Both parties in a recorded conversation or a real-time conversation situation, both parties have to consent to the call being recorded.
And if somebody were to call in to Stocks and Jocks, I mean, we are now a podcast, so we wouldn't have to do it. But if we were on the air, David would have to say, "Lou, you're now on the air. So if you come in with, you know, winging the N-word or the F-word around, and which is illegal, by the way, you could be prosecuted only if we say, now you're on the air. If we don't, it's sort of on us," type of thing. You know, I didn't know that, but Maddie, of course, hers knows all this stuff. But I
the situation is even more bizarre than that. So all that would happen if you were recording me without my consent, all that would happen in 95% of those cases is that I might have a civil action against, you know, against you. There might be some criminal issue there, but it's minor.
Right.
But I would have a civil action. I would have a civil action against you. In the meantime, whoever released my recorded conversation, that's out there.
But why,
and everybody else and their dog can use it for whatever purposes
right.
they want. Embarrassment, cancellation, whatever.
Well, let me ask one more question. How do people, and I don't know, I happen to know, because I've known Lou a long time, Lou is not an alcohol imbiber. And, but if you meet me somewhere at a local emporium, and we talk about stuff we talk about on the show and have a good old time, and you're drinking Diet Coke, and you walk out and it's a winter night and you slip and fall on your ass, and somebody happens to capture that on their phone, people now believe that that has now become their property. So one day when you're running for senator, 2 days before, you know, the election, somebody's going to pop this out there. Here's a drunken Lou Michaels can't even walk out of a saloon, and publishes the damn thing. People now think that is their right, Lou. And I'm going to say I don't think it is. I don't know. And obviously I'm becoming a Luddite on this subject. But where exactly does the law land on that? Or is there a law? Or are we trying to make one up as we go along?
Generally, activities that are taken in a public forum, like the street or something like that, are open game, fair game for somebody to record or to take a picture of or whatever. However, that is not unlimited. I mean, so for example, if you're in your yard or in your house and somebody, you know, outside records your activity inside the house or records your activity where you think you have a reasonable expectation of being private and releases it, then you fall under one of the three, I think it is, classic examples of invasion of privacy. If they sell your likeness and use it for some kind of monetary gain, then that's illegal and generally opens you up to a lawsuit for invasion of privacy. But a straightforward, hey, I saw this, I just put it up on my Twitter feed, and it goes viral, and you're out on the street somewhere, you generally don't have any recourse.
What if with the caption, what if you were to say, here's the drunken Lou Michaels? You don't get to do that.
That might create a real problem, because at that point you're ascribing something to the individual who, you know, for some other purpose other than just entertainment, and moreover, you're ascribing a condition to the person that may or may not, you know, create a problem for them. So again, it's fact. These cases tend to be very fact specific. But a recording of me falling, slipping, and falling on a street outside a bar with a caption, "Drunk, you know, Lou Michaels staggers out onto the cold Chicago streets." That probably would, I think that would be actionable in some kind of defamatory case. Again, state law specific, but I think that would likely be actionable.
Okay, so you don't win the election, and what are you going to get out of the guy? $50?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
I mean, this is the famous, you know, the famous line from, what's his face, the senator from Alaska, Stevens, who was improperly prosecuted by the Department of Justice, and the case was ultimately reversed. And thrown out. And Stevens comes out of the courtroom after he's lost his election, and he's out on the street for a couple of years, and says, "Where do I go to get my reputation back?"
Well, isn't
now, the answer is you can't.
Well, isn't that why people used to dot people's I's?
I'm sorry, used to what?
Used to, well, as they say in the trading floor, they wouldn't say punch you, they'd say they'd dot your I.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean, that. So you now reminded me, I got a couple of other topics I wanted to raise. Of course, today was the day I slept through my wrist alarm. That you remind me now of one of the great lines of Mary Tyler Moore, where Lou Grant and is dealing with Ted Baxter, and Ted has done something really, you know, stupid and awful. And Lou says, Ted, if you don't, you know, apologize or change the circumstance here, I'm going to punch you in the face. And Ted looks at him, you know, and Lou is absolutely serious. Ed Asner was great in this role.
Oh, yeah,
He makes it very convincing. And Ted Baxter goes, you know, he kind of backs up a little bit and he goes, I'll sue. And Lou Grant goes, it'll be too late.
Isn't that the truth? Anyway.
Yeah. So the question of, you're right. That would get somebody, typically get somebody punched. But again, it doesn't matter, because once that thing goes viral, and I heard a really interesting discussion yesterday. Once that thing goes viral, you can't recover. The discussion I heard yesterday was somebody basically arguing we need to completely revisit our defamation law, because now defamation and invasion of privacy mean something completely different than they did when these statutes were originally published. Interestingly enough, Clarence Thomas and one other judge, and I can't remember who it is, I think it's Gorsuch, the guy from Colorado, both indicated in opinions that they put out about a month ago, I think, that they would be willing to revisit the standard for defamation under New York Times v. Sullivan. New York Times v. Sullivan is a famous case, Supreme Court case from the mid-60s, I think it's 64, where the court established the public figure defamation standard, which means you have to use malice. The defamatory language has to be malicious and reckless before a public figure, which is very vaguely defined, can actually sue for defamation. And it's a different kind of, it's a very loose standard and makes it very difficult for anybody who is identified as a quote unquote public figure to recover for defamation. And the two justices, it's a landmark case in American jurisprudence, and for the justices to say they'd be willing to revisit the standard, I think is very interesting.
Well, from what my peeps tell me, I've not been invited, by the way, if you happen to go to a party either at Derek Jeter's house or A-Rod, there's a guy at the door that says your cell phone goes on the shelf here. It's not going into the party.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean that's so this, again, this goes back to who do you trust? I mean, one of the things that sort of jumps out at me at this Taylor Nichols situation. Well, the first thing that jumps out at me is what's called the intersectionality battle. So you have two people who are members of protected classes. One's a white female, one's a black female. In the intersectional world that these cases are now operating in, one of these people has more social justice claim than the other to a job or in the context of a grievance.
Well,
and that's the black female.
All right, Luke, can I back up just a hair? I like to do this. I mean, I do this, not just to interrupt you, by the way. It's because you have talked about these kinds of things in the past, and I just want to match them up. And I've asked you before that clearly if PTI is going to hire anybody, okay, and two ladies show up, and we can't just hire the better looking one or the one who's not 300 pounds. I mean,
you can hire the better looking one. Well, you can say, look, I don't want a physically unattractive person working for me. You just have to be careful how you do it.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you've mentioned that at some level, I don't have to hire somebody who's 275 to play a cheerleader in a movie. I mean, somewhere along the line, if it's entertainment, you get to cross the line. You get to hire, you know, George Clooney and not me, right?
I mean, sure, because in that role, in those kinds of jobs, personal appearance or physical capability are legitimate job considerations.
Okay, so, and you said you get to do that. Now the ESPN situation, you know, flip the conversation just a hair and say, Rachel says she's not getting hired just because she's younger and now better looking than me. What's the difference? mean, it's the same sort of.
There's a big difference, because both of these women are not in an age protected category, so they can talk about the younger person being hired back and forth without triggering any kind of red flags. Race, on the other hand, coming in and saying they're hiring her because she's black, that's a hot button, because that race is a protected factor, and because for the last 18 months or so we've been losing our minds over this particular protected factor in terms of how it plays out in with regard to police and jobs and
You're a vast vault of knowledge. I keep trying to drag it out. What if the NBA, who obviously is all over, even though they say they aren't, they're all over these announcement hires? I mean, it basically says that the Chicago Cubs has the right to approve the announcers. What if they decide in the last year, for whatever reason, I happen to know, well, I think it's maybe coming back because this year haven't seen so much of it, but I know an awful lot of white people that will never watch an NBA game again after with the protests and with this and that and people becoming their own general managers and forming teams and no loyalty to the town, that kind of, let's just say, so what if the NBA says, hey, you know what, our listenership has gone from 70% white to 45% black. We want more black women on here because now it's more black guys looking at it. Not that they like the black women anymore. I mean, I'm just saying that if they were to say that now, does ESPN, does that give them the right to hire somebody black over somebody white or to fire somebody white?
No.
Okay, so.
No. So for example, a customer base, if you try to use the argument that this is from some of the original discrimination cases back in the 60s after Title VII was passed. If you come in and say, basically, our customer base is bigoted, they want to watch somebody of a particular race or gender, and so we're going to use race or gender or in certain cases age or disability as a hiring factor because our customer base is bigoted and wants to just see that person, that kind of a person. That's not a legitimate basis for hiring.
But where's the line? I'll use a real old movie with Sidney Poitier. Guess who's coming to dinner? Well, it's supposed to be about a black guy and a white girl.
You're not putting a white guy in that role.
Yeah, you're not putting a white guy in that role.
At that point, race is a bona fide occupational qualification. That's the term. And for entertainment purposes, you can say, I've got to have a black actor in this role. It's like Othello. I'm not going to cast a white actor in the role of Othello because that role was written as if he's black, and the references of the play won't make any sense if I put a black or a white guy or an Asian person into that role. Those are legitimate considerations in things like plays and movies. And your comment about the 275-pound cheerleader is on target here. Those are legitimate factors in plays and movies because of the nature of the business.
But how do all these laws interact, Lou? I mean, if you look at the NFL on Sunday, I mean, I haven't watched it that much lately, but it's the white old coach, right? It's the Jimmy Johnson Ditka when he could stay awake. It's the white old coach. It's the street cred black guy, and it's some lady you drag out of somewhere. I mean, but you're not going to get two white old coaches. You're probably not going to get three street cred black guys, and you're not going to get three women. So I mean, To me, these laws are kind of weird. They definitely do say this is what we want in this spot.
Sure. So the point is, and this is something that a lot of people, especially in management, don't get about employment laws, that it is a fact-driven circumstance. Every one of these hires stands alone in terms of, why did you hire this person? Were you considering race? And you know, most employers, and in most cases, have to say, race was not a consideration. This guy's personality is fantastic. This guy's internal ability or ability to communicate complex ideas is better than the other person's. And these are very subjective, but everybody knows in sort of the background that race factors into some of this, especially in circumstances where you're trying to make the quote-unquote diversity hire. it's a very murky area. It's kind of a blurring of affirmative action with this diversity concept. But these are factors that are taken into account behind the scenes. If someone was to come out and say, I hired Maria Taylor because she's black, that would be a problem. If somebody comes out, and this is why I don't understand why something called critical race theory is gaining such a foothold in American corporate training and things like this, because it specifically tells managers and employers, look, you have to deal with the system is racist, and you have to look at people based on their race from the get-go, because that's really what their identity is tied up with. That runs afoul of almost every civil rights law that you and I can think of, whether it's the Chicago, you know, law against discrimination, or the Illinois Human Rights Act, or the federal Title VII statutes. All of this stuff prohibits taking the race, for example, into account in your decision making. If you do it blatantly, you've got a violation. Everybody kind of knows we're looking to hire, in many of these cases, we're looking to hire somebody who has a particular appearance, especially with television, or has a particular appearance, or who sounds a particular way, or who looks a particular way. We're looking for that in this job. We just can't come out and say we're making race a factor in our determination.
Well, we got a dash here, Lou. But you know what? In this new world, the Twitter world, nobody cares about any of these laws. Nobody cares about how they were thought out. They're going to do it their way now. If you know, and nobody cares about this stuff. I don't think.
I think there's a tremendous amount of sloppiness that is going on in this in the context of these discussions. And honestly, what's going to have to happen, I think, is there's going to have to be litigation on this point, which is why there is so much concern over a number of the cases that are now moving through the Supreme Court.
All right, Lou, you take care of yourself, buddy. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk at you next week. Maybe we'll talk. Hopefully, we won't have to talk violence next week. But
maybe I'll be awake next week. Sorry about that.
But you made up for it, bud. Good stuff. S&P futures down 64 now. Ouch. NASDAQ futures down 223. Come right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, the Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures now down 63.75. This is getting worse, not better. NASDAQ Futures down 223. Dow Futures down 502. Do we have Dan?
Yes.
So you've already bought in the 25 futures you sold last night at 5 o'clock, I hear.
That was me.
Somebody had to do it. It might as well be you. What is going on, bud, this morning? Why this morning?
I think, you know, there's, you know, no specific news. I think a little bit of this is just, you know, as the market gets frothy here and, you know, continues to break new highs, it's going to be these little sell-offs here and there. I do think there are some people who are concerned about the, you know, the how quickly the 10-year yield came in. But actually, I don't view that as a negative. I view that as a positive, as more investors are putting money into, you know, in overseas investors are putting money into our market. The Fed is continuing to buy. That program is not slowing down. So that'll help the 10-year. There are some people who are reaching for, you know, quality. They're reaching for, you know, in this market, they're thinking that, hey, you know, we're going to take our gains in tech and, you know, move to the sidelines for the summer or for a period of time. But I don't think there's any specific news that's really necessarily of concern. You know, it may be day-to-day news, but I don't think it's long-term news. I do think the Fed is really going to just look reactively to make decisions and not so much proactively, and I think they pretty much determine that. We'll find out more this week, but my feeling is but my feeling is right now we're in good shape economically. From the, you know, the face-to-face meetings I've been having now with companies, what I'm getting are pretty much what we're hearing across the board. Supply chain issues continue, but they are temporary as those start getting resolved over time. We're going to see less issues with inflation on things like raw materials, gasoline, possibly food. Where we are going to see, in my belief, is where we are still going to see inflation is on the wage side. And I think across the board, not just entry-level workers, I think pharmacists, pilots are going to have to be paid more to work. So there's that sort of inflation. I don't want to call it scare, but that inflation phenomenon happening, and I think it'll continue to happen. But I don't think it's bad for the economy. I don't think it's bad for the markets. I think this is temporary. Like today, for example, I do think the sell-off, if you will, or the sell-off in rates or the rise in prices on the 10-year and on bonds in general, I think there's going to be some point soon where that trade is over and it's going to be time to shorten duration or look for, you know, floating rate notes or do what we do, which is focus on those dividend paying stocks and preferreds, and bonds that are still offering a little bit of yield. So it's been harder and harder as the weeks go by to find yield. This push for yield is just, it's, you know, we're at our maximum. You know, we're getting to probably the top for this push for yield. I don't think I've seen this in my career, where there's been such a demand for yield and there's so few places to find it. However, that being said, you know, I still like the names that we've been mentioning. The preferred stocks, certainly the Blue Knights and the Chicken Soup for the Soul, the REITs. I think one that actually is worth taking a look at again is SELF, which is Global Self Storage. Their stock sold off a bit, and I think it's a good buy here. If you can get it in the low fives, you're getting a 6.5% dividend there. And another name that I think I've mentioned once, I did mention SWM last week, which I had visited those guys, and they have a 4.5% dividend. But another name, Black Hills Corporation, which is a utility that is focused predominantly in the Plain States, South Dakota, Colorado, they have some facilities, Montana and Wyoming. And this is a very conservatively run company paying a 3.5% dividend, very steady Eddie if you're looking for some stability in this market. If you're concerned about names, this is one BKH that I think is
is a good solid name and pays a decent dividend. Another name that I've talked about that I really like, that has sold off here and for no fundamental reason, but is Thunderbird. The over-the-counter ticker is THBRF. They will be listed on NASDAQ soon, but if you want to get in before this, you know, the price appreciation, get in on the over-the-counter trade, and then we're going to see this stock jump once they're on NASDAQ. We're going to get a lot more investor interest. Fundamentals of the company are extremely strong. They're a company that did well, very well during the COVID pandemic because they, big part of the business is animation. They write content for animation and for factual shows, but they're a very well managed company, free cash flow positive for, you know, for a small company their size. And I think we're going to see a lot more upside in this name. So there are opportunities out there. You got to dig a little deeper to find them. And you also have to let some of the day-to-day noise go in the market because there's, you know, as I've told a few of my clients who look at their accounts every day, you know, you're just going to get, you know, it's going to be like being on a roller coaster. I mean, we are having some day-to-day volatility in here, and, you know, it's not only with the market, but it could be with the specific names we're in because we're in smaller cap names. But overall, the trend has been very positive this year. Reviewing our first half, we were very, you know, very pleased with, 25%+ returns. And it's, you know, I don't think we're, you know, slowing down. We might be just slowing down for a time period here, the typical summer doldrums, but I don't think I still think the direction is positive. There's still a lot of cash on the side that's stepping into the market, and companies are the biggest problem that companies are having now is how to satisfy demand, and that's not a bad problem to have.
No, it's there's a lot of good stuff happening. There's a lot of what I consider to be crazy stuff happening because I'm an old monetarist, Dan. You figured that out by now. I can't even figure out where if these guys are on foot or horseback. You hear debates all day long, and obviously you're close to all this. You see kind of what's happening. I don't see how we have any sort of even clue as to whether the rise in the GDP here is nominal or real. I suspect it's pretty much all nominal, meaning it's just money driving it, and we're going to find at the end of the year we've got a 6% growth rate with the administration's going to be breaking their arms, patting himself on the back. We're going to find out we had 7% inflation, which means we were actually -1. And I have a real feel for that. And if you look at the charts, well, up until today, you look at the charts, every stock looks great. I had a guy last night who's just wanting to become an investor, and he's saying, should I just buy companies I like? And I said, well, generally I'd say yeah, but it's like I say, only buy used cars you like, but there's still a price at which you want to buy it and a price you want to sell it. And the concept that I love this company, but it's just too friggin' high, somehow is kind of lost today. I mean, I look at some of these companies, and again, I value stuff like I'm valuing a Six Flat sometimes, which is a weakness in markets like this. I'll understand that, but I like Zoom. Okay, if it was 1/5 of the price, I might consider it. I mean, it looks to me like they're going nowhere, and they're like 100 times. We're coming off a year, the best year in their life, and what were they, 100, 200 times earnings or something, and 80 times revenue? How's it going to get any better for these guys? I mean, isn't to say they won't grow into it, but some of these companies, I don't see how anybody values. I mean, the Fed. I must have heard 15 people yesterday who I pretty much respect. Although you can't, when you're on CNBC, you don't know where business reporting starts and where entertainment ends. But, they're talking about, this doesn't matter, that doesn't matter, you gotta go with this one, it's a great market. The only way we're gonna know, Dan, is what the real prices are, is the day the Fed stops pouring $8 billion a day into the system, which they've done in the last 2 weeks. It's like going to an auction in some poor county and having some guy show up from Monte Carlo and bids twice what everybody else would pay, and he walks out. That doesn't mean the stuff's worth twice as much. It means you had one guy there paying too much, right?
Right.
I don't even know how. I don't even want to necessarily throw my opinion out there other than be careful, because it's very difficult to figure out what this stuff's even worth, because it's a phony world, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm up in the Boston area, working up here and doing a family reunion and some family visits, and what I'm seeing here is the same thing in the real estate market that we're seeing in the stock market, and it's just this sort of, you know, valuations that are astronomical, and you know how people are able to afford these, but people still are moving forward, you know, bidding wars and all that. There really isn't a slowdown in terms of, you know, this cash that needs to be spent or this cash that wants to be spent, and there's no, you know, not a whole lot of people looking for like these, you know, rare opportunities or opportunities that have been overlooked. They're starting to all get picked over, if you will. And I think the same thing is happening in the stock market, that, you know, investors, you know, especially those that are looking for yield, which is you know, where I am, a lot of the good opportunities are picked over, and you just got to work a little harder or dig a little harder. Our philosophy is never to pay more than we believe is fair value, so we're not momentum players. I think a lot of people who weren't momentum players have become momentum players in this environment because they don't want to miss out, and they're not paying attention to the fundamentals. Again, we view that as a mistake. You really have to look at what you're investing in. Even to use Zoom as an example, I mean, now that I'm getting back out and meeting face-to-face with companies and clients, I could do, I don't know if I'm in the majority here, but I am happy not to do a Zoom call.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And I think more and more people that I'm talking to would prefer it as well, and they'd rather have the commute to work, or they'd rather have the commute to meeting people face-to-face than continuing like this virtual reality, if you will. So I you know, I can see that there are certain stocks that will be the hot names for a period of time, you know, whether it's a Zoom or possibly even the electric cars or the, you know, Bitcoin. And you just, you know, again, you have to look at your time horizon. If your time horizon is long term, these names are going to be names that you play with in your you know, your personal account or your speculative account, and not expect to, you know, once you've made your money and then it's time to move on, you have to know when to sell. And I think the sell discipline is really important. So, and the problem right now, well, it's a good problem to have, but the problem right now is because the alternative of sitting in cash is giving you nothing. You want to have some, and you want to have your investment somewhere, and that's why I've, you know, mentioned some names that I think are a lot more conservative, but are still giving you a decent yield. But chasing is not the way to make money in the investment world.
You know, I think is maybe better than me. There is, and we have you know, different groups that I manage money for, and you do the same. There are people that were the managers, and I work with a bunch of different guys, and that they're like, you know, I bought this stock here, and it's like way up. It's a big winner. I can't even begin to justify buying it at this price. So my advice is, if that's the way you feel, sell it.
Right. All right.
So, because I like counsel, for lack of a better term. And
right. Yeah.
You think I should sell it? I said, no. You think you should sell it? You just told me that, and you're the one who knows more about it. You know more about the company than I do. So I'm just telling you from what you just told me. It's like going to the doctor and the guy say, well, you really should have a shot of penicillin. Well, if that's what I need, give it to me. You know, right?
Right.
But the phone, it can't be in somebody's account. And even though people are paying somebody else to manage their account, I'm sure you're seeing some of this. People spend all day long looking at their stuff. You know, and that's what they're paying you to do. But that's not the idea of being retired, to stare at what your money manager does all day. That's the idea of hiring us, right?
So right. Those are my exact words.
Yeah,
my job. You don't have to worry about this.
Yeah.
Don't look at it day to day. And in fact, it can change in the middle of the day too. And you know, some of it has to do with pricing, especially when it comes to high yield bonds and, you know, less liquid securities. But that's not going to really help you. You really have to look. You know, you really have to look at the long term. You really have to look at what your goals are and your objectives.
But you and I are also old enough to know that when you say, you just said this, so I'm not giving you grief, but one of my buddies, at our age, for whatever reason, whenever you called somebody, and David knows this, but whenever you called somebody, there were no cell phones, so you always got the person's mother who immediately dove for the phone, right? So, I mean, if you're gonna yeah. if you're gonna get a softball game or a football game together, you had to go through everybody's mom, right?
That would be right.
That was very true.
So you knew everybody's mom, right? So at the point where you knew them almost as much as you did your own. So one of my buddies buys this is you know before 2007, he buys a bunch of Citigroup. So I'm going for a graduation party or something. I run into her and she's a terrific. She's still around, which is you know she's got to be 90 something, and she's sharp as a tack. She says to me. So, Tommy, Jimmy bought me this Citigroup stuff, and it doesn't look so hot, and he tells me that we're in for the long term. And he goes, when somebody says that, doesn't don't they mean it's a really crappy buy? And I go, that's exactly what they mean. She goes, doesn't that mean it's a crappy buy when somebody says we're in for the long term? That if their great-grandkid sells it for a penny more, it was a good investment or something like that. But, I mean, you and I know that there's going to come a day, man, maybe not this decade, maybe... There's going to come a day when the best thing you can do for your people or me for me is to be all in cash or to be in puts or something. I mean, there have, you know, Mama told me there'd be days like this, right? As the song said.
Right.
I mean, there's decades where the market never went up, you know, and I can name a few of them while I've been in business. So, I mean, the idea that somebody with a $10 million account calling somebody up because all of a sudden they got $300,000 in cash and saying, what are you doing? What are they doing?
Exactly. I try to explain, and that has happened. In fact, in the same week, I think last week, I had somebody who had additional cash that was wondering why it hadn't been spent, and then I had somebody else who maybe had 5% in cash and was asking why we didn't have more in cash. And you know, I think there is an article or there's some information that they're receiving that's always going to tell both sides of the story. And again, it kind of goes back to their objectives. I, having managed mutual funds for a long time, I was used to having to have cash invested. Having managed separate accounts, I would always tell clients that there are going to be times where you need to move into cash. That's going to be the safest place you can be. So, I think the environment that we're in now is not necessarily one of those. I don't think like what's happening today, for example, is indicative of the longer term trend. I think this is, you know, this is the summer, and there isn't as much activity. I don't think people are. I mean, there is some concern about the inflation people are seeing in the grocery store at the gas pump, but I don't think it's severe enough for people to start selling. That being said, you know, you've got to be smart when something reaches a price target, and when you really do believe it's realize, you know, that it's maximum value, you have to sell. I mean, I think it's, you know, there's holding on just for the sake of holding on doesn't make sense. And, you know, there has to be a time you do that. And yes, if it means accumulating more cash, that's
perfect. Well, Dan, I just had this conversation last weekend. Don't take this wrong. I was thinking about you over the weekend. And the reason why I was having no luck with this conversation. And I said, you know, if I had Dan here, I could probably have him talk to this person and maybe we'd get further than me. Somebody had bought some bonds. And they put money in these bonds, and they were paying whatever, 6%, however many years ago this was. And now the bonds have appreciated dramatically, obviously. And I said, I think you should just sell them. I said, no, I need my 6%. And I was trying to explain as best I could that you're not getting 6% anymore. What do you mean? I'm getting 6%. I said, when you bought them at 90 cents on the dollar, the market interest rate was 6. Now that they're like 120, your market rate is like 3.8.
Right.
No, it's not. I'm getting 6. And I'm like, you are on the 90. You're not on the 120. Well, what am I going to do with the 120? I'm not going to get anything on that. I said, but you're not getting anything on it now. I mean, nobody, what percentage of the population do you think has any idea what you and I talk about, like if everybody's supposed to know? I mean, they had no idea that at the 120, they're getting today's market price. Well, then what am I going to do with the 120? I can't get anything. But you're not, and here I'm getting 6. But you're not getting, but finally I said, Dan's not here. I'm going to go to the other room and have a beer, basically. I was getting nowhere.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, a tough one. I think we call it like the seesaw. I think it's hard for people to understand that, you know, the drop in rates, means a higher, you know, as rates go down, prices go up. And I think generally what I say is that price will eventually come back. It's at 120. By the time it matures, it'll be at 100. So you're going to lose those 20 points. You might be making that 6%. But, you know, you have to basically subtract what you lose in capital and that might, that's going to knock a couple percentage points. So maybe it goes down to 4 or 3.5 today. And so that's the rate that you're looking at. Yeah, I would, you know, if that's a situation, you know, again, it kind of depends on the client's needs, and it also depends on what else is in the portfolio. But generally, I would say that's a selling opportunity. You know, if there's and your client is right to say, you know, where do we go with this? That might be the time to go into a preferred, or, you know, I don't know if I'd necessarily sit and keep it in cash, because you're certainly making more sitting in that than you would be in cash. But that's the time to move on to another, you know, opportunity, and kind of realize, if you will, the gain that you've taken in that.
Well, Dan, where do you sit? And this is a question, because I know you don't mind telling the truth to the listeners. I freely admit that I feel like I'm in the same spot that I was in 1999, which meant that I was an OEX trader. I had a really good feel of the national economics, you know, the Fed stuff, because I was trading, you know, the 100 biggest stocks in the world, and those were the things that influenced my day and my world. Yet we would talk all day long about all these other stocks that were racing up, you know, doubling every day. I had no idea who these companies were, what they did. I mean, I researched a couple of them, and I was just appalled at where they were trading. You know, it was like, you know, we're going to give stuff away free at Marshall Fields, but we're going to have posters hanging from the ceiling, and we're going to sell the posters in advertising or make up more than we were making money on selling suits. And it just never made any sense to me. And sure enough, at the end of the day, I mean, it wasn't like I bought puts in any of these things or made any money at it, because I had my world and this was a different world. And I feel sort of the same now. The stuff that my clients have, and because I do a protected index program, as you know, I'm pretty comfortable that, you know, even yesterday people were clamoring to put money to work. So I did some stuff in the Russell. Now the Russell's down today, but I bought the puts, you know, right at the money, and I sold some calls at closer than I normally would. So I'm a 30 delta. I'm clearly not 100 delta. I'm a 30 delta. So if you're going to put money to work, you know, and the next day be down, that's the way to do it, right? I mean, because you're barely down anything. But still, these guys wing these other stocks by me from these other firms. I mean, I'm looking at the PE. It's like 99. I don't know enough to say you should sell this piece of crap, but I can't imagine me putting a portfolio together like that for people. What if the stock was half or a third or a quarter of where it's trading? I still wouldn't think it was a buy. I mean, I'm lost like I was in 99. I mean, are you closer to this than me? Because I'm not.
Well, in terms of one of the main things we do is research. So what we'll do when we see a new portfolio that has securities that we haven't followed is we'll take a look. Because one, we're looking to make a decision about whether we want to own it or not, and two, we might have a new idea. So, but in general, when you're talking about a lot of the new names, whether they be tech names or tech related names or biotech names, that's generally not our thing. So rather than trying to learn from scratch and trying to understand a product, we will go. I'll listen to these companies at conferences just for knowledge. But in terms of looking at the long term holds, you really have to continuously trade in and out of these names and really understand the way these stocks trade. And they don't have any history. It's very difficult to decide, or very difficult to understand their trading pattern, let alone their business and whether their products or their services are going to be successful in this environment. Or, you know, so what we would do, like I said, would be a little bit more research. But it's like you, we tend not to go for whatever is hot at the moment, you know, whatever the hot name is that's coming to the market or that has come to the market that everybody's talking about. Because I can assure you there won't be people talking about it next week or next month.
What were your first thoughts? I don't know if you listened last Tuesday, and I try not to give recommendations, as you well know. But I was, the idea that this Didi stock came out, this Chinese, essentially Uber, right? And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, after what has just happened to Baidu, we can't even figure out, and the idea that you're not going to get any voting rights, you're not going to get any ownership, whatever, of this thing, and 20 years ago, the New York Stock Exchange wouldn't have touched it with a 10-foot pole. Now, all of a sudden, the greed has got to the point where, you know, we'll list your dog's bowl if he wants it. I mean, so I'm sitting there, how can I say this politically correctly? What manner of moron would recommend that thing to their people or to clamor to get into this thing just because it's an IPO from China? I wouldn't touch a Chinese stock with anybody's money. I wouldn't start with my own. I'm sure not going to. But I never dreamed that in 3 days the government was going to clamp down on a thing. And the first thing you should have done is bought puts. I don't even know if they were listed. I mean, who in God's name would recommend that to anybody, Dan?
Yeah, no, I'm exactly in your. I totally agree, and I wouldn't touch it either. And yeah, I think the thing is, not only do you have to understand this new stock and this new company, you really have to understand the Chinese business culture. You have to understand the Chinese tech culture, and that, you know, that is for somebody who's a specialist. That's definitely not what where I want to put my time. And you're right. I think if you're already looking at a name like that here in the U.S., I'm not going to touch it. So why would I touch it in China? You know,
yeah.
And that's sort of the way I look at it. It's just, it adds one layer. There's that additional, you know, when you're looking at all the different risks that are associated with buying a security, buying a stock, or taking a position in a stock, if you will, then you're going to add that additional risk, which I would call, you know, foreign culture, or it could be currency, but foreign culture as well. So you're adding this, or sovereign risk. You're adding this other whole dimension of risk, and unless you really have a good handle on that, not my thing. Not I do not see that being prudent for a long term investor.
Dan, you still like one last question, buddy? You still like that ASTE you were talking about last week?
I do, yeah, and I really like what they. I do. I had a very good meeting with them, and I do like them. I think they're a. They call it rock to road, but I think they're really going to be benefiting in the. This environment, and having driven around the roads, Tom, here in Boston, there's a huge demand.
Oh God, yeah.
for paving and new roads.
Well,
so.
if it's Chicago, you and I would be in the shack in front suspension business.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, but thank you very much. I actually got a few of my clients are looking at both ASTE and SWM, and they kind of like what they see. So I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, but we're close. So
perfect.
So take care, buddy, and keep the good ones coming. And I'll talk to you next week. SP futures down 57. NASDAQ futures down 214. Again, an ugly morning here so far. The only stock in the industrials is I've got trading above ground here is Honeywell's up 55 cents. Everything else is down pretty heavy. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. This is Dave Scatina on the board. Got a down Thursday here so far. Of course, David's already over there buying the dip. What are you buying, David? Buying the dip.
Just buy futures, Tom.
Buy the futures? Which ones?
S&P.
All right, because you know, a lot of people want to do the Russell's getting its butt kicked. Q's were at all-time highs last
year. All right, I'll back you on your Russell play. Buy the Russell, too.
Buy the Russell. Buy everything. Just buy. We're down. Buy. Dow futures down 466. They were down over 500. We got kind of carnage around the rest of the world, too. Europe, we've got the DAX down 342 now. That's 2.2%. FTSE down 143, 2%. This is worse than it was an hour ago, David. CAC around down 163, 2.5%. European markets down 2% amid global sell-off as recovery concerns weigh. Now, something happened here between last night about 10:30 when I looked, we were down just a little bit, and now there's some, maybe Asia. Nikkei down 248.8%, Shanghai down 28.8%, but the Hang Seng down 807, that's 2.9%, so that's a little bit of a shocker. As a way of a review, yesterday Dow was up 104, S&P up 14, NASDAQ up 1. Bonds, and this is the big news here this morning, down 4 basis points at 1.27 on the 10-year yield. Crazy. Bund minus 0.32, which is low, it's been there for a while. Japan almost making it back to zero at a positive 0.02. UK 0.57, they were 0.89 a couple of months ago, so we're at 0.82 at least. We got oil down a quarter at 71.95, Brent down 21 cents, 73.22. So the oil market is very quiet here. Natural gas down 4 cents, 3.55. RBOB unchanged at 2.20. And we've got gold up 14.90 at 18.17. Maybe it'll actually stay over 1800 this time. We'll see. Silver up 4 cents, 26.17, lagging there a little bit. Copper down 7 cents, 4.25. Platinum down 12 bucks, 1069. And our favorite crypto down 1750 bucks to 32,887. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports? It's cool out.
It is cool. 7:36 in Chicago currently. It's 64 and cloudy. We're going to have a high around 70. And it's going to be cloudy all day, possible rain. Phoenix listeners, 92 and clear with a beautiful 111, hot and sunny. Traffic, normal buildups or actually heavy buildups now on the Eisenhower and the Kennedy and the 55. I do have an accident report, accident blocking the left lane on the exit ramp. Tri-State 294 and 80 north before the 94 Tri-State Tollway. In sports, Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay wins Game 5. Beating Montreal 1-0, winning back-to-back Stanley Cup Finals. NBA Finals, Suns play tonight, leading 1-0. They'll take on the Bucks. And in baseball, Cubs break 11-game losing streak, beating the Phillies 8-3. Sox beat the Twins 6-1. Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 6-4. Back to you, Chief.
What do you like in the NBAs?
Suns.
Really?
I do, yeah.
I've become a Milwaukee fan. I don't know why, but I think I do know why. I like the guy was really good, and I also like the kid from Notre Dame, Connaughton.
Yeah, I don't watch enough of it, but if I had a pick, I'd take the Suns.
Well, that's what bets are for, you know.
Right.
Are they favored? They must be.
Yeah.
By
I believe
a lot?
They are. I don't know. I don't know the odds on them. I mean, I really don't follow the NBA that much, as you spoke about earlier.
Yeah. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
You should.
We do, Tom.
How are you, buddy? I'm doing all right. I have a question here. Is D.C. suspends Giuliani's law license. Are we suing? Are we getting rid of lawyers now that lie? David, I think your mic's still on over there. So if we get rid of lawyers that lie, how many are we going to have left?
Well, you've got to make a distinction between lying and
being an aggressive, you know, representative of your client. And I think the whole thing with Giuliani, he just had the wrong client. And anybody associated with Trump, you know, in whatever sector, is likely to pay a price among the powers that be. So I think when you start restricting the rights of lawyers to practice law based on whose clients they've had, then you've got a complete destruction of the judicial system. That's just unbelievable to me.
Well, and petty,
extremely petty too. It shows that you know there's just no way you can have a fair hearing about any of this stuff if you make it impossible for anybody to represent Trump without endangering your law license in the process. It's just crazy.
Well, even there's a line here, and I don't know what it is. And obviously, I know your political affiliations, but I don't. Trump seemed to have the ability to take his lawyers and turn them into his bag man, which somewhere along the line, I mean, even the Godfather, you know, Tom Hagen, you know, didn't kill people. he stayed on the law side of it. I mean, how the other guy,
Robert Duvall character?
Yeah. So I mean, the one guy's in jail because he was like delivering sacks of money for Trump. I mean, I don't know if that gets you lawyer client privilege, does it?
No, but I don't think that's what's gotten Giuliani in trouble in New York anyway, or in D.C. It's just his association, it seems, with Trump. So
I don't understand where, I mean, obviously that was the entire thrust, even though somebody know, a lot of times people don't tell what I'm talking about, maybe me either. But with Lou's kind of, are we anchored in some sort of principle here, or are we just wandering around? Right? When it comes to law, when it comes to race relations, when it comes to hiring, when it comes to, I mean, I started the conversation. I know somebody, I was talking to somebody who's getting hired by a financial firm, we'll go nameless. And the questions they ask are totally against anything Lou's been telling me what you can ask people in interviews anymore. I mean, they don't even care. I mean, everybody's doing what they want to do, and there's no one from it. You can see it in the streets. You want to shoot somebody, you shoot them. You don't care. I mean,
both of your conversations today with Dan and with Lou were really interesting. When Lou was talking about, you know, employment law and what employers can do and what they can't do and what they often do.
Yeah.
It's pretty shocking stuff.
Yeah, I mean, boy, does Lou know his stuff or what? I mean,
But
I don't, but if you're a regular person running a company, which, you know, I mean, Dan technically is the president of PTI, but we both run the place. I don't know that there's any guidance in there for an individual person. I mean, sometimes you can hire somebody who's the better looking and the youngest, and sometimes you can't. And if somebody's a movie star, clearly they have to be, they either got to be good looking and black or white and blonde or whatever it is, because that's what you're hiring for. Then that's okay. Yet, if you're looking for somebody to be on TV for your firm, I guess you can at least pick somebody who's going to look pretty decent on the camera, and, you know, not me. I couldn't tell you where any of the lines are. Can you?
Oh, no. And there's little stuff encoded in all of these various professions, too, that seem to trump anything else when it comes to skills. So you look at the national news media, or even the local media, too, and clearly the driving force behind how these anchors get chosen for these jobs is nepotism. It's in your family blood. You've got a parent or a sibling or a spouse or somebody in the industry that counts for a great deal. That guarantees you a job despite your looks, despite your credentials, despite your skills. And that just has just turned the national news media into a complete joke.
But it's not new.
Result, you know, it filters out in other ways, but, you know, I think you can find the same thing in Hollywood. You can find the same thing in publishing and so on. It's the cronyism and the nepotism in it is disgusting.
Even then, though, Jim, I mean, we know that. I mean, but also, it's all about, you know, that it's who you know in some ways. I mean, you know, we have a couple of examples. I mean, Howard Cosell. What was his main line? I never played the game, so nobody ever wanted to give me the job as a color commentator, right? And yet he spent, you know, Howard Cosell, you know, like him or hate him, was a brilliant man. I mean, he was 20 some years old. He was in charge of the Navy's, I think it was a Navy, he was like a captain, and he was in charge of all the landing craft production in New York Harbor, and he had like 25,000 people working for him. You know, I mean, that work, you know, he was in charge of that many people for landing craft for like the Normandy invasions and stuff. And all of a sudden, he's thrown out of the Army. Then he goes to law school, and he had a little tape recorder, and he liked sports. He went around and started interviewing people. And had like a bazillion interviews for, it took him forever to get some kind of a job because he wasn't a former player. And yet, you know, he sort of knew. But then, who's the guy who's, retiring from the Blackhawks after this year? Dave, what's his name? The terrific announcer. What the hell is his name? Got him one.
Foley.
Foley. Now, you know how Foley got the job?
You were talking about it recently. Yeah. Refresh my memory.
Foley's dad, was it Foley Buick?
Right.
Or something, and they were a long time sponsor of the Hawks, to where his old man knew Wirtz and all these guys, you know, very well, because they were big contributors or sponsors. And yet the kid, who is now retiring, went to some school in Michigan, but then he loved hockey, and he started doing hockey for his college or for another college, and actually learned the business from the ground up and became very, very good. And so he, you know, the Hawks, because of his dad, he got a look-see, you know, but he did all the stuff himself anyway. Now, if it would have been one of our friends, you know, Artie Moore, who's also was an announcer for Boston College for a while. Artie, I don't think he's in, you know, he didn't do it for 40 years either, but Artie was really pretty good. And he never got anywhere with that because his dad wasn't a sponsor, but it wasn't like, you know, Foley was off the street and got the job. You know, it just so happened that he knew somebody in the place, and that's just human nature. Probably if we hire somebody, it's going to be somebody that I know from the trading floor that I know I can trust, right? I mean, that's to a certain extent that's not great human resource management, but it's also, I want to know that when somebody's talking to a client, that they haven't lied to me in 40 years, they're not going to lie to them. You know, I know that's being maybe selfish on my part, but I also know it's not so bad way to look at people either, John. So
and you also know the quality of their references,
right?
Because you know their background.
Well, I am the reference.
That counts for a heck of a lot. And it isn't that the connections of these people are, you know, able to pull levers for you or somebody else. It's because you know they're trustworthy and they're not going to embarrass you or cause pain for your clients. So that's just smart hiring, I think.
Well, but I mean, what I'm saying, whenever I talk to Lou, I understand everything he's saying. I could never draw the line between, okay, this person, it's entertainment, so they got to be good looking. But this person, you know, because they gain 40 pounds, you can't fire them because they do a good job. I mean, not that you want to anyway, but I'm saying I have no idea to make the call if somebody asks me, well, can I do it or not, you know?
Well, and you don't know often, nor can you know, who's on the other side and who's likely to be an adversary and what's driving them too, and how they can make trouble if they want to, you know, push a situation because they think they've got some kind of power now. And, you know, that's the substance of the ESPN issues that Lou was talking about. If somebody wants to, they've got lots of stuff they can leak, they can quote out of context, they can twist in the perfectly wrong way to humiliate the employer or blackmail them into doing something. So that's a totally, you know, without ethics, without morals, without anything else. But depending on who's on the other side and what kind of, you know, power they have, it doesn't matter how upstanding you are or how careful you've been. You can still lose big time.
Well, I also, being a, I couldn't do an econometrics for you if my life depended on it, which is okay because 90% of listeners don't even know what econometrics is. But, David, what's econometrics?
I don't know.
Yeah,
Thanks for not asking me. Nor
should you. When you have all these economic formulas and stuff and people are doing, you know, predictions and all this stuff out of the Fed and all these other places, it's the people who actually put the numbers into the formulas. Those are called econometricians. And I don't know anybody who was one of those in school. Anybody wanted to go down that road, but there are somebody that does that stuff. It wouldn't be me, you know, type of thing. Anyway, I'm more of a behavioral economist. I look at the numbers and how it sort of tries to affect people's behavior. And one thing I've really noticed, Jan, is that, and David, whenever there's an industry, where people are being paid an awful lot more than I would say, it's either a non-competitive industry by definition. I mean, it was only one Babe Ruth, it's hard to define. Whenever people are getting paid a lot more than they would be making competitively, all this other stuff comes to play. You know, nobody is going to have sex with Harvey Weinstein for a competitively paid job, I don't think. I mean, nobody could be that blind. Whatever. I mean, who knows? But what I'm saying is, but if all of a sudden the job is, we'll pay you $5 million when you're actually willing to do the job for $200,000, now there's $4.8 million in play, shall we say? Is that a fair statement?
Right.
Economically, there is. There definitely is. I mean, that's why the way to stop corruption in any of these major cities is to have one of the, and it won't stop it, the way to minimize it is to have a serious competitive bidding process. Because if a job, somebody should be making 10%, 12% on the job, and if it's a $50 million paving contract for three exits on the Dan Ryan, and the guy makes $4 or $5 million, if he does it right, if he does it on time, if he brings it in and he has risk, and he's happy as a clam, he made his $5 million on $50 million, which is a 10% return. Now, depending again, who put the money up, there's a million, I don't want to go through all that, but if he didn't put up any money, then maybe $5 million is too much, but whatever. The point being is if he makes $5 million and you call him up and say, I need you to spend $1 million on buying tickets for five judges I like, the guy's going to say, what are you talking about? It was a competitive bid. There's no money here for you. I mean, there might be one ticket because I like you, but you know, lay off the $1 million type thing. But now, if the $50 million job, the guy made $25 million, you know the phone call's coming, right?
Right.
I mean, in Chicago, you know, what's he going to want from me? I mean, that was the beauty of guys like Mayor Daley. I will say the original Mayor Daley. I'm friends of the son, so I'm not going to say anything about him. But I mean, the idea is, you look at those guys and you'd say, well, they're not very wealthy. Yeah, they are. They have a lot of money. They just happen to be in other people's pockets. So all of a sudden you get the call, Dave Scatina gets the call. Hey, babe, mayor, how are you? Or it wouldn't be the mayor, it'd be somebody else. Boy, I really like this John Flanagan guy for judge. You know, he's running this, $50 a ticket for, have pizza and beer on Western Avenue tonight. Boy, it should be nice if, 10 of your people want to show, which really means, I want $500 worth of, or $5,000 worth of tickets, whatever, 10 times, no, $500 worth of tickets. I don't really care if you go and eat pizza, but by the way, I want you to come up with $500 for John's campaign, is what you're saying, right?
Right.
Go ahead.
It's like the Carrie Austin phenomenon.
Yeah.
The alderman who was just indicted. You know, she's got a developer, a builder who's doing stuff in her ward, and oh, by the way, I need some kitchen work and bathroom work done too. And all of a sudden this is, you know, factored in. This is hardly a competitive bid situation. This is just, you know, in exchange for my having given you this job, you owe me for this now too. And that took her down, and I suspect she's going to be out. So,
I got a test for you two Chicago boys. Have you ever been to one of these things? And this surprised me. I thought, you know, I was kind of up on some of the stuff reading Mike Royko my whole life. Where you went to one of these fundraiser things for an alderman, and you made the check out to like somebody in California, an alderman in California. You ever seen this one, David?
No, honestly, I have not.
Well, and the guy from California is like there, so it's not even really a scam. But then when the guy in California has one, you write the check out to the Chicago alderman. That I thought was very imaginative and very precious. It was almost a tear in my eye. How this one, I've never thought of this. These guys were way ahead of me. Again, I'm the dummy. this is priceless.
You're as old as I am, Tom. Do you remember how it used to be the protocol for paying for your driver's license at the Secretary of State, who you make your check out to?
Well, I never did
Paul
that.
Powell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you did. You made it out to Paul Powell. the original. He was the original Secretary of State. Was he the guy with the shoeboxes?
The shoeboxes,
yeah. It's shoeboxes of cash. He's the guy they found dead in the hotel, in the motel room in Springfield. And he had,
yeah.
He brought the shoeboxes with him. They were in the motel room.
Talk about right. Commingling funds. How can you not commingle funds?
Yeah, you made it out to him. God. All right, so why all of a sudden, why are we getting our butt kicked in the market here, Jen? I did not...
I wonder if people are seeing that the Chinese phenomenon is got some pretty shaky legs. I think, you know, China's in some big trouble. And, you know, of course, that's not how they present it at all. But, I mean, they're saber-rattling about Taiwan and the big display of you know, solidarity with the party and the 100th celebration of the... 100-year celebration of the formation of the Communist Party. To me, this is just a way of window dressing in what dire straits they are. I mean, the economy is definitely cooling off there. They've got, you know, the possibility of tremendous blowback depending on how the COVID thing plays out. And I never would have expected the kind of narrative that we're having now about their cooperation with us or vice versa in gain of function on the virus early on and the cover-up that followed. I think they stand to take a tremendous hit geopolitically and economically. So it could be, you know, some kind of manifestation of that concern, but might be other stuff that I'm completely unaware of, too.
But they're not as vulnerable politically to a recession that we are because nobody has any power to throw anybody out.
Well, they've got an even more, you know, unpredictable political situation than we do. I mean, they have no, you know, orderly transfer of power. If anything happens to somebody in the inner circle, this causes, you know, the worst kind of fears, and you can see it in the history of the Soviet Union. You'll see it in Haiti now, too, with the assassination of the president there. I mean, I think that's all linked up with some kind of Chinese influence where the guy who was just assassinated down there was really down on any kind of involvement with China or the Belt and Road Initiative or letting them invest, and now he's dead, and the successor, you know, whoever it will probably be more disposed to the Chinese. I don't think you'd see assassinations like that if the Chinese didn't really need places like Haiti to keep going.
Well, considering how Haiti's been, the lack of development there in the last however many years that I know of, I'm kind of stunned it doesn't happen more often.
Oh, yeah, and you know, it's a tumultuous, doesn't begin to describe their political history, and it's a fascinating place, and I've never gone there. I've been always wanted to see it, but it's just, it's a kind of a case study in, you know, how many months or years till the next upheaval. And
well, didn't they have
there's a kind of power struggle. It's, you know, it's kind of a vicarious power struggle because that's, you know, the Dominican Republic shares a boundary with it. I think it closed its border last night because they're not sure what the heck's going on or what else may be the fallout.
Well, they're not doing so hot, but they're light years ahead of Haiti. I mean, didn't they have Papa Doc and then Little Fat Doc?
And you know, the Aristide, remember the Catholic priest, and, you know, then you got the Clintons deeply involved there, too. So, I mean, all of this looks kind of bad, you know, from a, it's hardly a transparent situation when it comes to investment or, you know, charitable funds, or the scandal about what happened after the earthquake and the way, you know, relief funds were handled, and how none of that has really translated to any kind of improvement.
Well,
Jen,
I have a friend, and interesting lady. She was trying to do some work for the United Nations in some of these areas, and where they're trying to, anytime you try and bring, I mean, I, as much as I'm not a Bill Gates fan, I really sympathize with him and his foundation trying to bring any good in any of these areas. When I say any of these, some of them are worse than others, but, I mean, this lady was trying to do some stuff and they ended up not doing it, right? But they were down the road where they were doing some things with, essentially X-raying, talk about going back a ways, taking an image of like a container. So you knew what was in the container. When it arrived at the port, the destination port, you took another image, and if they didn't match, you rejected it because you knew the thing had got some contraband along the way. And they were trying to do that in some of these countries. Well, to get it done, the people had to pay for it, right? Well, to get it done, a lot of times you had to kick 10 cents on the dollar to the dictator's Swiss bank account. So I mean, it wouldn't be a bit surprised if Gates tried to actually build a water treatment plant in Haiti that he has to pay off the dictator to build a water treatment plant for his own people. I mean,
but that's the Robert Mugabe phenomenon,
yeah,
too. I mean, and he's not the only one. And, you know, a lot of these post-colonial empires were just, you know, racketeering on big.
Yeah, but I mean, it's horrible. But John, you think this is the start of anything today, or it's just a one-off?
It could be, you know, just a one-off. I wonder. I mean, I think there's a lot that's yet to happen here, and I think there's, so the bounce back in the economy here should continue. I hope it does anyway, but there's so many other, you know, stuff that can put it on the skids, and I'm worried about, you know, the freedom that the people have in big cities to move around and do things like they used to, or gather together in big numbers.
It's pretty dangerous, isn't it?
Turning it into some kind of police spectacle. So, you know, if that doesn't get under control, you're going to see some really angry, disaffected people before long.
Well, I think most people would rather choose a police spectacle than a gang spectacle.
Oh, yeah. The police have a fighting chance anyway.
Try to take care of yourself. Maybe I may even see you one of these days. You never know.
I hope.
SP futures down 59. NASDAQ futures down 202. Dow futures down like 460. So right now, not good. We'll see if the Bite of Dippers show up. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.